Welcome to Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam, the podcast dedicated to helping you tackle the challenges of parenting teenagers without the drama. I'm your host, Dr. Cam. Let's get on with the show. Do you feel disconnected from your teen? Does it seem like they don't trust you enough to open up? The reason you're not close certainly isn't due to a lack of trying, but it could be that you're trying the wrong things. Today, I'm excited to introduce Kristen Duke, a trusted mentor specializing in supporting parents through the challenges of raising teenagers. Kristen will help us explore common pitfalls in parent-teen relationships and share practical strategies to foster trust and strengthen connections with our teens. Welcome, Kristen. How are you?
Hi, so great. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. So let's share a bit of your backstory. What inspired you to become a mentor to mom with teenagers?
Oh, you know, I just saw so much pain in the hearts of moms and being a parent myself and heading into the teen years. And I had a little bit of a rocky relationship with my own mom and all of those things together. I thought, you know, I need to dig deeper. And I had already been in the internet space, sharing other family-related content. And I really just decided to focus in on teenagers because I saw there was a gap in the conversation that people weren't talking about it. And I thought, you know, we need to talk about this more. So I just started digging in about 5 years ago, and here we are.
That's fantastic. And it's so true that there seems to be this stigma about asking for help when our kids are teens. And I think parents, when they're babies and little, you know, there's a lot of people asking their new parents. It's okay. But once they're teenagers, you think, I should have this figured out.
Right.
And it is a whole new ball game. Like,
yes,
your parenting,
it
is not the same thing at all. So I love that people are becoming more and more open about asking for help and that there's people like you out there providing it. What are the things that you see parents struggle with the most when it comes with to their teenagers?
Oh, struggle with the most. I think there's so much we have envisioned for our kids. We think, oh, we want them to live this best life and to do all of the things that we did plus more. And, you know, these dreams, and they sometimes don't want to do the same things that we think that
they should be doing.
And so your own expectation, right? I've been in conversations recently about several people as it pertains to, I'll just, you know, school dances. Oh, I had so much fun going to school dances, to prom and to homecoming and everything in between. And my kid doesn't want to do that. And I don't understand why. And I'm really trying to help them see how fun it's going to be if they just this, this, and this. And I agree. I had fun at all those activities too. And I hope that my kid will experience it. And sometimes they just don't want to. And so, you know, I have a strong emphasis on encourage versus enforcing. No one wants to think they're enforcing, but I definitely had a moment with my oldest when he was in high school and he didn't want to ask someone to prom. And I was like, think of all those girls that are just sitting there waiting for someone to ask them. And I mean, that's a shaming tactic. And I didn't realize it, right? I didn't realize at the time that what I was doing was shaming him. So that's one of the things that I've uncovered as, you know, blind spots, right? We all have these blind spots. We don't realize what we're doing. And I didn't realize in the moment where I was trying to have him envision the girl waiting for the guy to ask him that I was shaming him. And he was more introverted and he, you know, he had a group of good friends, but he just wasn't feeling comfortable asking someone and going to the dance. Yeah. And so I had to learn to be okay with that. And it was difficult. And I ultimately decided through trial and error that I would rather have a good relationship with my son and not shame him into things that I think he should be doing.
Right.
And support his decision. And I can still encourage and I can say, hey, have you thought about asking anyone to the dance? You know, and maybe a couple days or a week later, hey, I wanted to revisit the dance situation. What are your thoughts now? You know, and bringing it up, but the shaming tactics just don't work for them.
It is so hard because that line, I don't think, and like you said, I don't think people, we realize we're doing it because in our mind, our goal is to encourage them. Like we want them. And I think it's very difficult for us parents to walk that line of pushing our kids out of their comfort zone and shaming and trying to manipulate our kids to do what we think is best for them.
Yeah.
And thinking we always know what's best for them, how do we draw, like, how do we know when we've crossed that line?
You know, there's so many lines, so many really lines, are. So many situations. Yeah. It's a dance. It's always
like
a dance.
Like those laser beams that go across things.
Yeah. Mission Impossible, right? Yeah. I mean, I think my goal is, you know, I've decided my goal in my community is to help parents become more trusted by their teenagers.
Yeah.
And some people don't really understand what that is. And breaking that down really is when you have at the forefront, your relationship with your teenager, and you can start to tell, you can feel when you're crossing the line, right? You can feel sometimes when you're doing things, the look on their faces, the way that they're treating you. If you're getting the cold shoulder, if you're getting the constant eye rolls, if you're getting the door slamming, you can do something different. I think for so long, people have thought, oh, that's just the way teenagers are. And yes, while there is an element of that, teenagers are going through some major challenges, some changes, hormonal, all of those things. And at the same time, if they're treating you specifically in such a way constantly over and over, then it's time to look inside yourself to analyze and to say, what can I do differently? Instead of putting the blame on the teenage years and the hormonal teenager, it's what is it that I can do differently in our relationship so that they are interested in talking to me, that they're interested in hearing my advice and what I have to say. And when you are trusted, when they feel like they can trust you, they're more likely to listen to the advice that you give and your suggestions, and maybe step outside of their comfort zone even when they don't really want to do it.
100%. And I think when we move into the teen years, and there's so many different reasons for this, but when we move into the teen years, I feel like trust becomes something that falls away very quickly for two reasons. I think as parents, we go in already expecting our teens to be, quote, teens. And so we lose trust in them going, they're going to make a lot of bad decisions. And because we're not willing to give them that freedom and treat them differently than we did when they were little, they lose trust in us. And because we don't trust them, they lose trust in us. So I feel like we kind of, there's this like quicksand that many of us fall into when it comes to teens, where we just plummet in the trust level. How do we avoid doing that? How do we walk around that? Because I know it's possible.
Right. No, I love that visual of the quicksand. And I think, you know, part of it you mentioned is, you know, we assume that they're going to trust us because you've had a great relationship before. And then it meets this point in their life where they're, you know, they want to be independent and they've learned some things and they want to do things their way. And I think, you know, when you mentioned going around that quicksand, part of my mission also is to help parents shift this perspective when they're preteens, as they're teenagers, that, oh, that's just typical teen behavior.
Right.
Right. When you walk in with that perspective, you're placing the blame on them and you don't take any ownership for anything that you're doing. So when you have this expectation, oh, teens are just that way, that's just normal, that's just typical behavior, then you're going to treat, you know, you don't feel like you have to do anything different. And so I am trying to change this narrative globally, right? If I could just like shop around.
I'm with you. I know.
I'm like, no, yeah, teens are going through a hard time.
Yeah.
And there is strong emotions and they're annoyed with the world. Mm-hmm. So of course there's going to be some of that spreading over to you. But if you're responding to them, like, I can't believe you're treating me like that. I do so much for you. How dare you roll your eyes at me? You know, those kinds of things is still putting all the blame on them with no responsibility on yourself. And so I think like just stepping into the teen world saying, they're not giving me a hard time. They're having a hard time. I love that phrase. And just saying they're having a hard time. How can I be this soft place to land? How can I, you know, I'm not saying being a punching bag, and here's another fine line, right?
Right.
You don't want to be a punching bag, but you can be a soft place to land. You can be this calm response to their, you know, whirlwind of crazy. And when you continue to be that calm response, they start to feel safer with you, safer being themselves, and then it builds that trust. And so first off, to avoid the quicksand, going from your original question, is to just kind of decide in your mind, and maybe you need to put a little post-it note on your computer, on your mirror, you know, of giving them that benefit of a doubt and realizing they're going through a hard time. They're not giving you a hard time. And just that little shift in perspective can change so much.
It's amazing when we're able to shift how much our teens end up shifting their responses and attitude towards us. It's very difficult to convince parents of that. And I think one of the things I see a lot, and even the comments I get, like with content that I post, and I've seen your content and I get to see those comments too, is, oh, we're giving kids too much freedom. We're giving them, they're so rude today. They're so disrespectful. It's just these teens today. This is why, because parents are just listening to them and giving in to them.
Too soft. There's a lot of too soft parenting.
We're not parenting anymore. How do you respond to that?
You know, it is tricky. It's, you know, it's this, you know, gentle parenting, intentional parenting. It's hard to convince people that have already decided that that's the way that it is. And I think, you know, I've heard from people in my community. I think they just, I love the people. I love that there are different layers of people. Some are just there like, I'm kind of curious. Like, I think when you can go into it with this curious perspective, right? I'm curious what this lady's talking about, you know, what does she mean by becoming trusted? What does that look like? And I think if you can go into it with an open heart, being willing to learn, the challenge is that there is no firm way to do it, because as we talked a minute ago, there's this line and it's, you know, so situational, crossing the line with being too soft or being supportive, right? I think someone can look at the same situation and say, I mean, and I get it all the time, right? I'm posting a reel about, you know, something in gentle parenting. And I'll get 50-50, you know, I'll have 50% of the people say, that's too soft, you know, you're going to raise a wimp or whatever. And other people are like, I'm so grateful for this perspective, right? Saying the exact same thing. And so much has to do with their own background, their own teenager. And I think being open-minded enough to say, if you're in a terrible spot with your teenager and you really want a relationship, you're willing to give things a try. You're willing to try out this gentler approach. And it really just is within each person what they decide that they want to give a try.
I think the word gentle, even for me, throws me for a loop, because gentle comes across as being a doormat and being like, oh, honey, it's okay. And that's not what we're talking about.
Intentional parenting, that's another good word.
Yeah. So when we're talking about it, explain a little bit on how that is different from some of the other parenting styles. What makes it, and let's do intentional, because it is gentle, I think, is the opposite of being really harsh. But I think people misconstrue that as being passive. And that's not what we're talking about. So what are we talking about? What does that look like?
Yeah, you know, it is interesting because I've tried to define my own. You know, there's conscious parenting, gentle, intentional. They're all kind of balled into one. And I'm thinking, which one do I identify with? And I guess trusted. I've just kind of created my own, my own word of what my ultimate goal is. Yeah. And because my ultimate goal is that my teenager trusts me enough that they feel safe talking to me. They trust me enough that they're actually open to listening to me and my suggestions and my advice. So now I'm trying to remember, like, I'm going back to your actual question. Did I answer that or did I not?
Yeah. And I think it's about like how we're addressing it. What makes it different? Like you were saying, trust it. Let's just go and get very practical right now.
Go back to that. Okay.
What are some of the things that we need to do? Let's start here. What are some of the things that we're now doing that are actually pushing our kids away and ruining our, losing trust with them that we don't realize we're doing?
Okay, I got that. I'm glad you asked because, you know, in the last couple of years, I've been doing this deep dive and this research, like, you know, how, you know, the ultimate question is that I've mentioned, how do I get my teens to want to talk to me? How do I get them to listen to me, right? I think that's two ultimate parenting goals over and over, lots of different situations. So I've identified parenting blind spots, right?
Yes.
You don't know what you don't know. As I talked about with my son, I didn't realize that I was shaming him when I was saying, what about that girl sitting on the couch waiting for some boy to ask her. So I've identified in, and it's in a work that I've done and a course that I've created. I go through all these 30 different blind spots. There's lots more. There's more than that.
Blind spots.
All right. It feels a little overwhelming, but I'm just going to name a couple of them.
Okay.
So,
the biggies.
Yes. A couple. Overreacting is a big one. Ooh, I think, you know, freaking out is another way of saying that. And I know myself, like, I feel like I'm a pretty good mom and I have a strong tendency to freak out and overreact. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I've shared instances like, you know, in our family growing up, my kids would pack their lunches for school. My job was to do the grocery shopping and get all these things that were great for lunches. Their job was to make their own lunches and go to mm-hmm. school. Right. And so we had this family rule of we don't eat prepackaged snacks at home because they're for when we're away. And if we're eating these granola bars, I'll just say we're eating granola bars at home. They're not available when you go to school. And like, that's a lot for me to keep up with. Like I have in my mind, okay, I have this number of kids, there's this many days a week. And you know, I'd get the right amount. Math. If you're eating these at home, you're not going to have it for your lunch. And that's like more pressure and stress for me to keep up with. So I just had decided we're not going to have prepackaged snacks at home. There's other things, right? We got fruit. We got, you know, I'll just say like a box of Cheez-Its. Like it's easy.
I love when you say fruit and kids just look at you like, so yes, instead
not
of
as exciting. Either,
you want me to have fruit?
Yeah. Right. We had like bowls of like boxes of cereal. Like my boys loved eating cereal when they were in high school. They ate lots of boxes of cereal. So, but then I would find granola bar wrappers around the house. And I would just like in my mind, like they know that this is a rule. We have discussed this. They are teenagers. They are mature, responsible to know that like this is not the heart of a rule.
Yeah.
And then I would be like, hey, I found this. First of all, like why is the granola bar wrapper being left around the house? If you're going to do something, hide it, right? Put it at the bottom of the trash can. Throw it away or whatever. And so I would come out with this granola bar wrapper. Who is responsible for the wrapper? Of course, they're not going to be like, that was me. You know, like they're all looking at each other. Like, I don't know. And this is probably like, I'm saying like 12, 13, you know, young teen, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I recognize, you know, over time, like I got to let this go. I cannot make this something a priority for myself, for my family. Yes, it's a pain for me to keep up with the granola bars, but I can be more mindful. They can share with me, like eating a granola bar is not something I need to freak out about.
And if there aren't granola bars because they ate them, then they don't have it. Lunch.
Oh, right. Wow. Yes. Oh, well, they'll be okay. That's just a small example of myself about freaking out. And then I would do things like, I remember another time my teenager, he was probably 15. He came home super frustrated and he's venting to me, which of course I want because I want to be this trusted mom that he feels safe to vent with. And he's telling me about one of his friends and how his friend throws him under the bus, like especially in front of these other friends because he wants to look better. And I'm responding with, well, he is not a great friend. You need to stay away from him. And he looked at me and he's like, no, mom, it's not actually that bad. He's defending his friend in the same breath as he's like complaining about his friend. So, you know, these examples for me were, you know, in hindsight, I was freaking out and overreacting about his friend, which causes him to be less interested in sharing with me about his friend in the future.
Absolutely. So the note was, I'm not telling mom about that again.
Yes. Mom's not safe to talk with about my friend. So I had to learn, he's venting about his friend. He still loves his friend. He's very frustrated with his friend. I can still offer tidbits of advice, but the way I reacted and responded to it closed off any opportunity for advice that I had. So that's an example of the freaking out overreacting. I could give hundreds of examples, but I think we all can recognize within ourselves, you know, think back in the last couple of weeks or month, like where is an example of you freaking out?
Yeah.
You know, I shared two examples for myself and I started to notice those freak out moments and I started to realize, oh, this is breaking trust. This is breaking trust. And, you know, example with one of my daughters, she experienced some social anxiety and would text her friends or wouldn't text her friends back. And I'd be like, you need, this is not very thoughtful of you. You know, I'd go off on all these ways about how I'm trying to help her be a better person and a better friend, but I was overreacting in how I was delivering it.
Yeah.
So overreacting is a huge, and it really affects so many. I shared at the beginning of the blind spot journey because it affects so many other things. You know, one of them is giving advice.
Yeah.
You know, as parents, we have so much wonderful wisdom and advice to give if they would just listen. But I have learned, yes, I have some good advice to give and, you know, listen to them, hear them out when they're venting or whatever. And the golden question is, do you want to hear my thoughts? Would you like to hear? So I like to avoid using the word advice. But yeah. Just say, are you curious to hear some of my thoughts on it? And, you know, give them that opportunity of choice to say, no, I just wanted to vent. No, thank you. Yeah. Or yeah, that would be great. So if they say no, honor that. It's really, really hard as a parent to honor that.
Because we love giving unsolicited advice and our kids
right.
are someone that should take it. So of all yes. the world, there's someone that should take our advice. And then if they don't, it's so frustrating, but they should, they don't need to. Like unsolicited advice from anyone,
yeah.
particularly a parent. I mean, even at my age, and I love my mom dearly, but when she gives me advice, I still get that little twinge in my neck.
Right? Yes, yes. But the magic is when you ask if they want it, and there's kind of a no win. So if they say no, thank you, and you, okay, let me know if you change your mind.
Yep.
That's trust building.
Yes.
Super trust building to have them say no and you walk away. Let me know if you change your mind. They might change their mind and they might not, but it's building trust for the next time. So if they say yes, keep it short and sweet. I had a couple of thoughts, take it or leave it, but here's a suggestion. Here's a small experience from my life. Here's where I saw this happen with a friend, and it gives them the opportunity, but giving them that choice if they want advice is huge in trust building.
Very big.
And it's really hard to walk away from that. And you mentioned the should. That's another one of my favorite blind spots is shoulding on your teenager.
Yes.
And my favorite is don't should on your teenager.
Yep.
And it's a reminder, like if you can just eliminate the word should, and it's tricky to dance around it. You know, I'll say, oh, you should wear your hair back, or you should try wearing the other shirt, or you should text your friend, or you should avoid your friend, or you should tell your friend that he's treating you unkindly. You know, all of those, the shoulding, is a blind spot, you know? So it's really, I kind of go into and I dig deep into like all these micro on the surface. Of course it's loving parenting and it looks, it's like distrusting the more we do it. And so, all of those little micro situations, when we recognize them because they're blind to us, when we recognize them and work on them, then it builds trust. And I really strongly recommend bringing your teenager into this trust journey mm-hmm. and saying, hey, I just want you to know, I recognize that some things I've been doing have been breaking trust or causing you to not feel safe to talk to me. And my goal is that I want you to feel safe to talk to me. And I just want you to know that I'm working on a couple of things. And one of them is I recognize that I freak out sometimes.
Yes.
So bring them into this journey of you doing this self-work. It helps them to realize so many things. One, that like we're constantly on this growth journey. Two, that you're humble enough to recognize that it's not just them, that you have some stake in the relationship as well. And that through the process, and it's painful sometimes because they're going to be like, oh, I thought you were working on yourself and you just, you know, did this. Like, I appreciate your feedback. One of my new mantras is feedback is a gift. I appreciate your feedback. Thank you for letting me know. Yes, it's hurtful to be pointed out. And at the same time, we can't have growth in that relationship if they don't know that we're working on it and they can start to see over time that you are changing. And that's the hope too.
The consistency is really important. And one thing I see a lot of parents do is say, you have to trust me or you can trust me. And they try to convince their teen that they should trust them. I'm like, that's not how it works. And the more you try to push them to force them to trust you, the less trust you're building because you're just saying, I'm not going to change. Just trust me with all the overreacting and the shoulding and everything else instead of going, I want to understand why you don't trust me so that we can address that. And I think that's what, and then it is the consistency because if you do it once and don't do it again and then go back, they're going to be like, yeah, I don't trust that at all. It takes a while.
Right. Right. And then asking, you know, asking for their patience of saying, hey, I'm on this journey. I want you to recognize that I'm on this journey and I hope that you see growth and I need your help along the way.
Yeah. I think one of the hard things too, as you're talking, Kristen, is that, that humility that it takes to be a parent. And I think a lot of parents are not comfortable with being vulnerable with their kids or saying, you know, giving over some of the power to the kids saying, you tell me what I need to do. A lot of parents will be like, no, they're the kid. I'm the parent. I know what's best. I do. We can continue that, but we're not going to ever build trust that way.
Right.
So it's a decision, right? It's a if you want the want that disconnect, that's your choice. But if you want that connection, you've got to be vulnerable with them if you want them to be vulnerable with you. And I think it's that's a tough one. Hey parents, feeling overwhelmed? You don't have to do this alone. Join the Thriving Parent Academy, where community support is everything. Member Tracy said, we all developed at an exponential rate together. And Carrie admitted, I didn't think I needed this, but it's a life game changer. Don't wait. Join us at thrivingparent.org and use promo code THRIVE20 for 20% off your membership. Let's thrive together.
That's true. That's another blind spot is apologizing. part of it is having that humility because it is difficult. I have a difficult time, you know, in any relationship when you recognize you've messed up or you recognize room for improvement, it takes a lot to go to someone and say, just so you know, I'm working on it and I apologize, you know, and so much, you know, we'll just say, let's say that there was a blow up over a teenager being late for curfew or something that they knew was a rule that they weren't supposed to do. You don't have to apologize for having the rule. You can apologize, you know, you don't have to apologize because they were late and broke the rule. You take ownership for your own response and say, listen, I was frustrated that you came home late. It's still a family rule. There's still going to be a consequence or whatever with it. And I want to apologize for how I responded because explain yourself. I get worried, you know, when you come home late of your safety. My mind starts going to places of what could they possibly be doing? And bring them into your experience and say, that doesn't make it okay for how I responded. And so I just want you to know that I apologize for how I responded, not for, you know, what you did or whatever. And so that's also a line of, you know, not too soft. Like if they break something that you've discussed over and over, they know is a family rule. By just explaining, like apologizing for your part in it, which is an overreaction or a freak out. And another blind spot is just too many punishments too. You know, people like to just throw on the punishments. Yeah. Give me your phone. You know, you were late for curfew. Give me your phone for a week. Or you did this. Give me your phone. And I think the phone's taken away way too much and used for too much leverage. And I think it's the easy way to try and teach a lesson.
It's just manipulation is all it is.
Yeah.
It really is. Wait until you do what I want. And I struggle with that one too. My daughter's 18. I've never once taken her phone away ever.
Yeah. And people are like, oh, it works. They respond to it. Like it works in the short run, but then like their mind, they're trying to figure out how they can just manipulate you.
And they get around it all the time. And then parents get really angry at their kids for finding a way around it. I'm like, but that's because you haven't taught them or nothing has been learned here except for the fact that you're mean and taking their phone away, which justifies them finding a way around it. So I think
I'm with you. I don't take phones away either. My goal is to try and, you know, although I don't do much as it pertains to punishments, my recommendation, because people hold so tightly, no, they have to learn their lesson. They have to have some consequence to every action. I'm like, do they? Mm-hmm. Do they? No, they don't. But if you really want to, you know, if they don't do a job, have them do an extra job, you know, try and find something that correlates with it instead of just the easy route of taking the phone away.
Well, and I think also doing that is making an assumption that the reason your teen isn't doing it is because they're simply being defiant or they're simply just trying to make your life difficult. And rarely, until it's been done enough, then it becomes that. But at the beginning, rarely is it ever that. It's some reason. It's a lack of skill or a lack of the motivation in the moment, which we have to get underneath that and understand why. So
yes,
approaching it from, let me get curious, why is this happening? And then we can address it. And that's the approach, because now we set them up to succeed next time rather than just punishing them for what they've already done without giving them anything new for them to learn to do it better.
Yes. I love the iceberg analogy. You know, you mentioned getting underneath.
Yeah.
You know, we all are familiar with the Titanic and the iceberg. You know, you're seeing the tip of the iceberg, which is maybe defiant behavior or rolling eyes or, you know, lying to you. Lying's another blind spot, overreacting to lying.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, they have this behavior because something's going on underneath the surface. Yeah. What's going on underneath the surface? Are they sad? Are they lonely? Do they not have friends? Do they feel not smart? And so they're not doing well in school. Do they experience some mental health challenges that need to be addressed? You know, there's always a reason for the behavior, and it's find out what it is instead of just punishing the behavior.
Yeah. When we do that, we get in this kind of routine of it, those are the parents that end up coming to probably you, they come to me because now they're so far down and their kids are so rebellious and there's no trust and there's so much anger. And it's like, it started off simple and it kept rolling and rolling because you just continuously kept punishing and punishing and punishing, which was never addressing the problem. It was just creating more and more connection, disconnection and frustration and everything else. So now we've built up a problem. And the problem started with our response, not our children's behavior.
Yeah. And, you know, I wish so much, like you said, I try to figure out how to convey the message of, you know, while my space is one for parents of teenagers, how I wish the preteen parents would take notice. And some do.
They do.
I hear from some that are like, oh, I'm trying to learn before I get there. And I'm like, yes, I applaud you. Because the more you can learn about this response and the trust and what builds and what's break trust, it, you know, you can take it from this preteen stage and it goes on this great journey. And if you're learning about it when you're in a tricky spot, is what I say with your teenager, when you're in a spot where they're defiant or you just have this, you know, friction, it's still doable. You can still, you're never too late. Yeah. You're never too late to build trust. And it's going to take more effort because you're to earn that trust back. Or like you said, you know, I hear from parents like, what if they're suicidal? What if they're doing drugs? And I'm like, this is where professional help really comes in. And it's not so simple. It's, you know, there's a lot of going backwards and, relearning how to gain that trust. And it is more challenging when you're in a distrusting place to earn trust versus learning how to earn trust from the younger ages.
I think those moments where we feel a lot of pressure too, because there's something really pressing, like you were saying, it's interesting because parents then want to continue what they're doing because of the sense of urgency. And I try to explain to them, you're just wasting time continuing to do more and more of what's creating and feeding into the problem rather than stepping back and trying to course correct. The sooner you step back and course correct, the sooner we can address the issue. But if you keep barreling ahead this way, you're wasting time. And it's, I think parents really struggle with that idea.
It's so hard because it's scary when you're in a really scary spot, you know, whether it's drugs or something that's harder and heavier, or they're in a relationship and, you know, you're worried about teen pregnancy or something like that. It is a scary spot. And so I feel like that's not where I feel like my strong expertise is. I feel like mine is more in this earlier phases, but I'm talking to this, you know, whole internet and trying to share tips that are, I don't have, you know, that's more for you, right? The professional mental health providers when they're in this dangerous spot. And you can still do things to build trust, you know, but I talk a lot about like, don't put so many rules on, don't put punishments on, you know? And so they're like, well, what if they're in this dangerous place? Well, yeah, you need to step in. You do need to step in and do more but the majority of my conversations are for middle to earlier phases, and not, I'm not saying don't take away your teenager's phone if they're really struggling with pornography and are accessing it on their phone. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying don't take away their phone then, but I am, but that is part of it, is even just taking away their device, if there's a pornography concern, is not the solution. It's teaching that, and even putting on filters is not the solution. No. You know, the ultimate goal is to teach them to have their own personal internal filter and teach them the whys behind and the detriments and the concerns with why they don't want to participate in, you know, looking up inappropriate images and how that affects them and how that affects their future relationships. And just taking away their device isn't going to do that.
And the shaming, that's where shaming comes in a lot too, I think, where we try to stop them through that. One of the things too, like you were saying, and I think a lot of parents wait until it gets to that emergency place to ask for help. And I think what you and I are, we're trying to do is prevent it from ever getting there. Like if you listen now and we start, even if there's, you know, barely anything, if you start changing that path or you're starting to see things and you change now, you don't have to end there. Like that is not a definitive road that everyone takes. And I think one of the things that I hear a lot that we're trying to communicate is these rebellious, terrible teens where your teen is yelling, I hate you, and nobody talks and doors are slammed. That is not the only path through adolescence.
Right.
It is not. It can
You don't have to expect it. Yeah.
No, it can be completely opposite than that.
Yeah.
Like, it can be amazing. I know. Yeah. We're experiencing it. Like, I love the teen years. They're phenomenal. But I think what I hear is we expect it. We feed into it. We react to it like it's going to be. We don't address it. We blame it on the teen. And we get there. And that stinks for everyone.
It does. And, you know, it seems to me so much goes back to our own childhood, right? And our experiences, whether it was, you know, I've heard people say, I was a defiant teenager, and so they expect their teenager to be. Yeah. Or I saw my sister who was a defiant teenager when I was, you know, quote, the good kid. Or I saw a friend. And so they've seen examples, but what they're not really digging into is, you know, how were they guided through that? How did their parents respond to them? And, you know, someone who sees it in a sibling, like, I was a good kid. I don't know why my sister did this, you know, but I think when you really can dig in, for the most part, it so much is, you know, how it's reacted to and responded to. And parents don't like to hear that. It puts accountability back on the adult, and nobody likes to hear that. Yeah. People like to just live with this whole idea of teenagers are just going to be defiant no matter what.
Yeah. I think a big piece of this too is, and what I want to make sure we're clear on, is this is not about blaming the parents either, because everyone's doing the best they know how in the moment. It's just saying there's a lot more to it, and there's a lot we can do to change that path. So if the path isn't, and your relationship isn't what you want with your teen, and the path isn't where you're going, you have power to do something. You're not at the mercy of your teen and their behavior. And I think that's the big piece of it. It's not you're to blame for this, but there's a lot you can do to change it.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because about 5 years ago, when I decided I was going to go full bore into the parenting teens realm, I had this nervousness myself, because I thought, how can I, you know, first of all, I didn't want to be like, oh, you know, look at me, I've got it all together and I've got these great relationships with my kids. And if you want to have the same thing, you know, follow along. Because I thought, I don't know that my teenager's not going to be, I'll just say, a drug addict. Yeah. I don't know that my teenager's not going to break the rules. I don't know that my teen's not going to, you know, not be in jail in 5 years. And so, like, how can I talk about how to be the perfect parent when I don't know how my kids are going to turn out, because I'm still in the middle of parenting them? And I came to this realization of I can't control how they turn out and the choices that they make. What I can control is my relationship with them and how I react and respond to them. And even if they're in jail or homeless on the street or, you know, have a crazy life, I want to have a relationship with them where they feel safe to talk to me and trusted by me, even if they're making decisions that I don't approve of, right? Exactly. And so it really shifted for me to be able to continue, like to feel good about continuing on this course, because it doesn't matter what my kids decide to do. And having a trusted relationship doesn't mean that they're not going to do these X, Y, Z things that we're afraid of. And how we approach it, how we react to it, how we respond to it can keep us in this trusted relationship, which will help them feel safe even when they mess up, whether it's when they're 16, 18, 25, 35. Yeah. We want to be able to continue that safe, trusted relationship so they don't ever feel like they can't talk to us, that they don't feel safe with us.
This is such a key point, because I think we misrepresent good parenting as raising perfect children that never make mistakes and do all the good stuff. That is not what our job is, because that's not in our control at all. They're their own humans. What you said is exactly what it is. What our job as parents is to be the best parent we can be for that child, and to be supportive and to help that child and have that trusting relationship, so that when they are in trouble or when something does happen, they know they can turn to us, not to fix it, but to support them and be there for them through it. And I think that is such an enormous difference, but it frees us up as parents too, because when we feel like our job is to make this kid perfect and mold them into and never let them make mistakes, we're trying to do the impossible.
Right. I've dug into the phrase, you know, I think a parent's ultimate goal, and I hear this, my ultimate goal is I just want you to be happy.
Oh, right? I hate that.
That's like an ultimate goal, right?
I know, it's terrible.
But like when you think of it, is like that's a lot of pressure for any person. I just want you to be happy. The phrase, you know, if you have to say just, I'm just trying to help. Yeah. Right? I found myself, that's another blind spot. I'm just trying to help. Right. Okay, so if you have to say the word just, that means you've done something that is disconnecting, is distrusting, you know, with your teenager. So, you know, the phrase, I just want you to be happy. Well, that almost makes it sound like life is supposed to be full of butterflies and rainbows, and that there's no, it's not normalizing difficulties and challenges. And, you know, and so what I've heard is, instead of saying, I just want you to be happy, you know, I want you, and I'm still trying to work on this. So I don't know what's a better phrase than I just want you to be happy is, I want you to live a fulfilling life. I'm trying to think of like what that is. Or I want you to live a life, like my hope for you is to live a life, an authentic life, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, full of bumps and bruises and trip ups along the way, normalizing difficulty. Because for some reason, it seems like teenagers, anyone, you know, aren't normalizing rough days or rough moments.
Oh no, we're pathologizing being stressed out. We're pathologizing being worried. You know, I think we're pathologizing being a teen a lot of times. It's like all of this stuff. So I think it is very difficult when we have all these labels for things. And when we say we just want them to be happy, our kids no longer trust us to come to us when they're not happy. Mm-hmm. And I've had teens tell me, I avoid my parents because it's exhausting to always pretend I'm okay in front of them. But if I don't, they overreact. So now I'm hiding in my room because it's easier that way.
Yes.
And I think this is really about how do we, I just want my child to be the best version of who she is.
Yeah.
Her. Like there's
constantly
no one else. I don't know.
A work in progress.
Yeah. I don't know what that's going to be, but I want her to always just strive to be the best version of who she is. And that's it. Right. Yeah. And I think that's, it's a hard thing because it's not always that perfect package that I envision. I mean, I don't know anybody that's the perfect package. So I don't know why I would expect my kid to be. Right.
That
seems really unrealistic.
Right.
So Kristen, I could obviously talk to you about this for probably 5 more days.
I know. This is so fun. I love geeking out on these conversations.
But I want people to be able to find you. So how can people find you?
Okay. Well, Kristen Duke Chats is my Instagram, where I try and share little tidbits every day of little actionable steps you can take. I do have what I call Team Trusted, which is my monthly membership. If people want to learn about blind spots, you know, you learn about the blind spots, and then we have a weekly live chat where we work as a team and we discuss them and we normalize the fact that we're all mm-hmm. in challenges with our own teenagers. We're all learning, we're growing. And I love that people say, I feel so much less alone because I recognize other people are kind of going through the same thing. Right. Like that's my hope in my community and all my spaces that A, you feel less alone. Yeah. I like to share my own personal experiences, which I do more in private, you know, a little bit more of a private podcast, private community where I can openly share. These are the challenges. Look, I have these same challenges with my kids. Oh, I've experienced these same blind spots as well. And I wanted to share about a freebie that I have, which is my Intentional Connection Playbook, which is 10 ways to grow connection with your teenager. And one of them I was just thinking of that's mentioned in my free playbook is, Rosebud and Thorn, which is kind of our family dinner table discussion of sharing a positive, sharing a thorn, which is like a not so great happening in the day and something you're looking forward to tomorrow. And I really love, like you said, normalizing the, I don't like to say the word bad, but if we want to say the word bad, we can. Normalizing the challenges in each day. And I think as your kids hear you normalize, oh, this good thing happened, this challenge happened, but I'm looking forward to this. As you normalize that, you know, then hopefully they feel safe to recognize like, oh, mom has rough things happening, or I've talked about challenges, like normalizing, oh yeah, this happened in your family dinner discussion. That doesn't have to be, oh, I'm so sorry that happened. It's just that this happened and I'm trying to move on from it. Or, you know, sometimes more discussion can come from that. But I am a big fan of normalizing the challenges in life. And your response to that, to your response doesn't have to be a freak out. It can be a, oh no, that's not good. Let's see if we can figure out a solution to that. Like that is another way that your teen might not want to share with you, like you said, because they're worried about, they want to protect you too. Like if they see that you're sad from they're sad, they don't want to share with you. And so like you said, hiding in their room because that's the safest place to be because no one's talking to them.
I know. Parents will ask me, I'm like, well, why won't my kid hang out with me? I'm like, is it fun to hang out with you? And a lot of them are like, maybe not. And I'm like, probably isn't very fun to hang out with you because it turns into a lecture or a criticism or
my favorite thing too is to suggest a TV show. If they don't want to hang out with you, if they're hiding in their room, watch a TV show, sit near each other, don't talk. That's a good in to connection if you're feeling disconnected right now.
100%. 100%. Oh, I'm loving Traitors right now. So good. Reality to Traitors. I love all. My daughter and I watch all kinds of reality stuff. That's our thing now. All right, Krista, I'm going to let you go because, again, we can talk forever. But thank you so much for jumping on and joining us today.
Yes, of course. It was such a delight.
Awesome.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap. Thank you, parents, for taking time out of your busy day to listen in. I appreciate you. If you found the episode enlightening, please like, review, and share with a friend navigating the teen years. Until next time, stay curious. Remember, there's always more to the story than what you see.